listening to Salaam Media live from our headquarters in South Africa.
This is News and Views on Salaam Media. With us this morning is Advocate Shabnam Mayet, Protect the Rohingya. That's the organization she's working with and represents. And we are obviously still busy. At times, it would appear, you know, from a screen, if one wants to use an analogy or a radar that is in front of us, the Rohingya just seems to drop off and then comes back and drop off. And then certain areas, Syria, Palestine, and so forth, there's so much of conflict areas. But Rohingya is ongoing. Most oppressed persons in the entire people in the entire world at this point in time is obviously the people from Rohingya. Where are we going to with this particular issue? Has there been any change, any discussion around the issue? I see an article, Burma's Rohingya Muslims, Glimmer of Hope at Last Question Mark, an article written by Jonah Fisher from the BBC. But let's find out exactly. And welcome to the program, Advocate Shabnam. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Welcome, Salaam. Thank you so much for having us on this morning.
Jazakallah khairan for being with us. Advocate Shabnam, what is it we need to know first? Like I said, sometimes it just seems for certain times that it drops off the radar and then it comes back again. But it is ongoing all the time. Where are we now and what is the latest in terms of the people of Rohingya?
Okay, well, definitely. You're so right. It drops off the radar. But the reality is that, as you said earlier, the Rohingya are the most oppressed and persecuted people in the world, and this is a continuous struggle for them. And the latest is that we've been hearing over the past few days that last year we heard that they would be calling for a commission to go and investigate the state of Rakhine. And now we're hearing that Kofi Annan has been requested to be a member of this commission. So it was confirmed on the 23rd of August by Aung San Suu Kyi that the 9-member advisory commission on Rakhine State would basically be called. And it's going to be a national initiative to resolve protracted issues in the region. And it's interesting because the last conference, which happened in Norway, which included all ethnic minorities to discuss the state of affairs back home in Myanmar, did not include the Rohingya. But now this commission is being set up specifically to look at Rakhine. And what they're saying is that the commission basically has 9 members, but these 9 members include staunch defenders of the previous military regime. A lot of those, as we know, are deniers of any atrocities against the Rohingya. Kofi Annan, of course, now being part of the team, is the past UN Secretary General. But so far we've had Yang Yi Lee and Thomas Ojia Quintana, who are both current UN Special Rapporteurs, who have made so many recommendations with the full might of the UN behind them, and nothing has happened. And Rohingya activists point to the fact that Kofi Annan himself was part of the UN establishment during the Rwandan genocide, and he himself has expressed great regret at not doing a better job of, you know, handling the situation better during that genocide. But most tellingly, this commission that is going into Rakhine has not a single Rohingya representative on it. So how do you put together a commission that is supposed to go and look at the situation in Rakhine, and it doesn't have a single Rohingya person? Who do the Rohingya relate to on this commission? Who will speak to them? As we know, the power dynamic is so skewed. Rohingya are constantly afraid to have anything to do with the establishment. So is this the best way to put together this commission? And of course, the 2 Rakhine members on this commission, the first one is a member of the Myanmar Human Rights Commission, who has refused to say the Rohingya name. So we're talking about a human rights commission in the world who denies people's or the group's right to self-identify. The other one is the vice chair of the Rakhine Women's Association. And up till 2012, this organization had actually denied the fact that the massacres ever happened in 2012. So, I mean, I can't really say how good this commission is going to be, especially because its mandate is to offer recommendations about the situation. And I think we've had enough recommendations over 4 years of massacres and violence and human trafficking. Now it is time for action.
What is worrying here is, you know, even with Kofi Annan and the United Nations, there seem to be, you know, some of the countries or people that basically move, you know, any agenda of conflict situation or political situations around the world. It's not only determined in this particular instance. We hear about the nine people that are going as an advisory, nine-member advisory commission on Rakhine State. But obviously, as you have now pointed out, the weakness in this is, first of all, any one single person from Rohingya, you know, being an academic or whatever else, or human rights activist, is not being included, even if it's just one person. And the other people come with a record. You know, in this commission, from the article I have with me, this Ms. So Kin Tint, you know, this person, you know, has obviously denied that there's been any such type of attacks on the people. You know, what can you tell us about her? She's one of the members, and she's also from the Rakhine State, I think.
It's the same one. And this is the thing. If your organization has been denying that there was a massacre in 2012, if your organization denies that the Rohingya are even Burmese, right? And if you refer to them as Bengali, if your organization refuses to let the Rohingya even call themselves Rohingya or mention their name, how can this be taken seriously, take and further? And basically, this commission is also supposed to initiate dialogue with political and community leaders in Rakhine. But if organizations don't recognize Rohingya as recognize their community leaders, were part in this dialogue with them. And even when this commission wants to go ahead and look at access to basic services, developmental issues, the assurance of basic rights and security of the people of Rakhine, they're not specifically saying we are going to look at the Rohingya situation, we're going to speak about the atrocities. They're speaking of Rakhine as a whole, and we have to remember that a part of that population is the one, you know, starting with the Rohingya.
Yes. So where we are at the moment, if you look at the people of Rohingya, you know, what will be the least, you know, from the demands that they have, or what should be, you know, rightfully theirs, what would they be happy with? You know, would it be fine for, first of all, just for Burma to say, all right, we have people here, they are from people of Rohingya, or, you know, we recognize them. Before anything, before we even talk about giving them land, where they're going to go and what are their rights and so forth. Because I think, well, where would we start? What would you put as a high up in the priority list of the people from Rohingya? What would they be saying to the world at this stage? What do they really want to happen to them?
Well, as you know, they're saying that, you know, it's just 4 months, this new government, we have to give them time to fall into their own system, and we have to understand that there's a transition, and the same old excuses. But what the Burmese Rohingya organization of the UK is saying, that's all well and good if you're going through your transition, but in the meantime, let's recognize the trend. Let's put together, you know, a commission to actually go through these human rights violations and call perpetrators to account. Let's relook at the 1982 citizenship law. Let's, you know, let's revoke it. Let's give the Rohingya their citizenship. And let's allow aid in. Let life for the Rohingya start normalizing. Let them remove themselves from the IDP camps. Let them start going back home, you know, to safe spaces. So even if we can't, oh, you know, change every situation on the ground because the government is only 4 months old, there are these small steps that they can begin to take. The Rohingya, that would be most important. You know, if the 1982 citizenship law is revoked, then at least they can start, you know, owning land, start attending tertiary education, have basic access, because as citizens, you know that, you know, you have a certain set of rights and access which become available to you. So there are basic things that can be done. And I think at this point, there isn't a single government in the world who can say, you know what, we don't know about the Rohingya, we don't know what's happening there, because they all do, and they should all actually put into play, you know, policies, or at least say something. But as we know with the Rohingya, the biggest issue is getting people to say something.
Yes, and when one looks at, I see here also, the Mabatas, the established by extremist monks to protect race and religion, has been disbanded. You know, is that a good sign for the people out in Rakhine State?
It's a good sign, and it's a great sign that Wiretu is being called to account over his comments made against Yang Mili. But the reality is that the Buddhist extremists have a lot of support, you know, and they're a large group. And so even if politically they don't have any weight, in terms of support and membership, there are many people that believe in their ideology and want to further it. So it doesn't mean that, you know, their fight against the Rohingya is over, that the Rohingya is safe from them.
And where is all of this going to be happening in terms of the 9-member advisory council that they basically put
out?
Well,
what they're saying is that the recommendations will be finalized in a report by next year. But, you know, starting from 2014, we see so many reports speaking about the genocide, speaking about war crimes, speaking about crimes against humanity. You know, then we've had the 2 special rapporteurs from the UN come into Myanmar, make their statement. So, you know, activists are not sure that recommendations or further recommendations are really what is required.
And it can be another case, perhaps something similar to, you know, what's happening in Israel at the moment with the Palestinian people, that you can put in tons of it and even, you know, certain legislation sometime from time to time in the UN. But, you know, if they don't follow them, they don't follow them. And that's, you know, the type of situation. What is the response, if any, from the people of Burma on this issue of the 9-member advisory council that they want to put in there?
From the government side, it's almost like, look, we even have Kofi Annan. We're doing something about the Rohingya. Give us space and time. Just back up. And so it's almost using it as an excuse to not really deal with the situation. Now we will have another, you know, 4 months going into 2017 where everyone will say, oh, well, the commission is working. We don't have to do anything. But within those 4 months, you know, there will still be sexual violence against Rohingya women. Rohingya will still be living in IDP camps. Thousands of them will still take to the oceans to try to, you know, get a better life elsewhere and caught by either fishing trawlers working as slave labor or marriage brokers. So the reality is that in the lifetime of the Rohingya, 4 months is a long time, you know, more to suffer, considering that the suffering began in 2012.
And, of course, it is playing for time once again, because this commission, I think, has a full year. They got to report back and finalize the report by August 2017 only. So there's a lot of any support from any other countries around that could probably, you know, sort of rush this one up again, perhaps, you know, countries like the Middle East countries or any Muslim countries or anyone out there that could be even someone just standing for justice for the people. Would this ever come up in a discussion in the UN?
Well, you know, countries have been saying things, but there hasn't been a consolidated international push. In fact, there hasn't even been such a massive push inside the ASEAN itself. And until countries actually come forward, as they did for South Africa, and say, no, this is not okay, I think that to a large extent, the Burmese government will have to act with impunity when it comes to the Rohingya.
So there is certainly great cause for concern once again. And whilst all this is happening, the atrocities still continue. We see a number of Rohingya people out of the country and, you know, seeking asylum at other places like, for example, Malaysia and so forth. So with the present situation on hand, Advocate Shebnam, what is it again we ask that maybe the public out there could possibly do, you know, to perhaps influence the situation in some way or the other? Is there anything the public could do out there?
Well, South Africans have a very robust civil society. And so the thing is, in the same way that we advocate for Syria and we advocate for Palestine, and inshallah we'll begin to advocate for Rohingya and the Central African Republic in the same way. And that is the hope, because we see more and more, you know, initiatives by young people, by women's groups, by Muslim communities in South Africa, and they're building this culture of protest and of fundraising and of speaking out and of having solidarity events. And as protest the Rohingya, we just hope that that will spread over to the Rohingya cause as well.
Yes, absolutely. And that struggle
and
must continue.
And of course, every person you tell is one more person who knows about the situation.
Yes, and the awareness also to be brought out to the people at large to continuously speak like we do for many other conflict areas. Like sometimes I say it just falls off the radar. No one even talks about it. And from time to time, you hardly hear it on your mainstream media. Rohingya is never discussed. I don't know whenever, but hardly ever you hear them talking about Rohingya. And perhaps, inshallah, we should be able to try try and increase that awareness. Jazakallah khairan so much for your time, Advocate Shabnam. Speak to you sometime
thank
in future
so
again. Shukran. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Welcome.
We were speaking to Advocate Shabnam Mayat from the organization Protect Rohingya. And what has basically happened now, the little bit of change and maybe the glimmer of hope. And as Jonah Fisher from BBC writes, with a question mark, is this a glimmer of hope we were looking for, where they have three international representatives, six from Burma, that are basically in this nine-member advisory council that's going to be trying to look at all the things pertaining to the people of Rohingya, the Burmese Rohingya, and this nine-member advisory commission on the Rakhine State is then going to work right through the course. But she says, we've got so many other reports that we do have, so many reports that we can look through. But nevertheless, this with Kofi Annan leading this group, they're going to be taking this back at least a full year. He's already 78 years old, Kofi Annan. And remember, under his watch, when he went out there, even the Rwandan genocide still continues. So you've got to be a little, you know, strong and powerful, and then take this back again. August 2017 is a cutoff date. They're going to be looking at that. It's a full year, and the atrocities doesn't go unabated. Every single day, more and more people are harmed and hurt and killed, and sexual violence and everything else that happens to the people of Rohingya. We continue making dua for them, inshallah, and bring that awareness, bring that discussion out of the people of Rohingya and how they could be assisted. And may Allah make it easy for them, inshallah.